BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello.
Presentation of Bill, Secretary Liz Kendall.
Universal Credit and Personal Independence Payment Bill.
So, just 3 months after the Secretary of State for Employment presented the government's proposals for welfare reform in her green paper, we now have sight of the bill itself as it starts its journey through Parliament. As many of you will know, those proposals have caused considerable anxiety amongst blind and partially sighted people, as it seemed clear that the eligibility rules relating to personal independence payments, or PIPs, were going to be toughened in a way that threatened to exclude many blind people, and that those receiving employment-related benefits were going to face substantial cuts. We had hoped to be able to put direct questions to the relevant ministers on your behalf, so we're surprised to receive this response to our request for an interview with Department for Work and Pensions Minister of State, Sir Stephen Timms.
We are not able to make the interview for early next week work, as we need at least 2 weeks' notice to get approval for media.
Quite how we were supposed to submit an interview request a fortnight in advance of an event whose date was not then known, i.e. the publication of the bill, wasn't explained. What the Department of Work and Pensions did tell us in their statement was...
We are determined to create a welfare system that supports people into work and out of poverty, backed by £1 billion to help sick or disabled people find good, secure jobs. We will never compromise on protecting people who need our support, and our reforms will mean the social security system will always be there for those who will never be able to work.
Well, the bill is scheduled to be debated in Parliament next Tuesday for the first time. Although, of course, today you'll have been hearing that over 100 Labour MPs are supporting an amendment to scrap the bill in its present form, which would effectively be enough to wipe out the government's majority if all opposition parties also voted against it. So, high, unpredictable politics then. But it doesn't change what we want to do today, which is give blind and partially sighted people information about what the bill in its present form would mean to them. So we've reconvened our own experts to help with your questions. Dominic Milne, currently working as Disability Income Maximisation Officer with Hackney Council, who has studied the proposals closely, and broadcaster and journalist with 50 years of reporting on disability issues, Kevin Mulhern. One question first to each of you. Dominic, first, how much new light does the bill shed on the specific financial consequences for visually impaired people? What do we know now that we didn't know before?
Well, the bill itself, Peter, doesn't actually give us that much more of an idea, apart from the fact that they're slightly tempering some of the changes that they're going to make by adding on a little bit of extra time for those claimants who might be affected. They're suggesting they add on an extra 3 months or 13 weeks for anybody who has their PIP removed due to the new rules. I think what we do know more about it now, though, is through other sources and different organisations have been doing research, we're starting to get more of an idea about how many people will be affected and to what kind of degree they will be affected financially.
And is there a headline there of what that tells you?
I think the key thing, I mean, if we look at it from the basics of the fact that extra costs of disability are what disability benefits are meant to be there for, and we know that the extra costs of disability are over £1,000 a month on average, what that's essentially going to mean is there's going to be an awful lot of people who've been using their PIP to pay for those extra costs are not going to be able to do so anymore, at least not to meet them at least part of the way. We also know that an awful lot of people, sadly, more than half of people who are in poverty actually are disabled or live with someone in their household who is disabled. And also we know that material deprivation is much higher in disabled households. Right. So this is going to have quite a big impact.
And that issue of the relationship between PIPs and extra costs is something we'll come on to more. Kevin, ever since the publication of the Green Paper, you've been dashing up and down Whitehall, talking both to MPs and civil servants about the implications of this bill. What's the atmosphere been? What have you discovered? And was anyone talking about blind people other than you?
Well, not much, but when you brought it up, it became very clear that nobody, either in the civil service or in the government, was trying to get at blind people. But when you pointed out that the change in the rules might well exclude many blind people, there was a state of shock, and it wasn't quite said in those terms, but you felt they were saying, these are not the people we're after. The rule they're introducing where you've got to gain 4 points, it's like a fence. The first fence you have to jump before you can get considered for your personal needs is you have to get 4 points. The 4 points relates to the daily living skills in PIPs. You have to score 4 points on a one particular skill or other, and it isn't clear that blind people will do that.
Well, we will come back, and I will put that to Dominic in a minute. But also joining us is Kelsey Trevitt, one of the many people worried about the possible loss of personal independence payments. Kelsey, just remind us of your situation regarding benefits.
Yeah, absolutely. So I receive PIP at the moment, so I'm totally blind myself, and I receive the higher elements of both parts of PIP, the daily living and the mobility elements of PIP.
And what do you use your PIP for?
It really is those additional costs of being disabled. Accessing the grocery shopping, I do my shopping online, which incurs a delivery fee, because accessing a grocery shop when you can't see at all is really challenging. And I think, you know, there's many examples of those additional costs. But what's really important here is they are also the additional parts of being disabled that facilitate me staying in work and retaining the job that I have and making sure that I can continue to access that.
And that will become important because you are both at work and receive PIPs. And there's some confusion about that in some minds. What would your question be to Dominic about your and others' situation?
I think my question really does hinge on that relationship, right? That, as you've mentioned, for many people, it's not clear that PIP is not a work-related benefit. So where has been the assessment, the consideration of the fact that the costs that PIP covers to cover the additional costs of disability, where's the relationship that's been considered with the fact that that keeps disabled people in work, in employment, in the economy?
I will go back to Dominic on this, but I want to go back to Kevin first, because I think this is one of your major concerns, the link being made between PIPs and work.
Absolutely. Like the statement that came from the department, which didn't even mention PIPs, and this Kendall, the minister, when interviewed, it blurs, and it's suddenly, oh, but anybody who's severely disabled, they would never be in danger. But what does that mean? It's not to do with employment, and they are not making it clear. If they are saying only people who are severely disabled are going to keep it, they have to address the issue of blind and low vision people, and the minister needs to come out and answer it.
So, Dominic, is that your sense of this, that this is a major change in what PIPS was originally intended to do?
Well, it is, and also, I mean, what's been mentioned so far by Kelsey, and the fact that PIP is not an out-of-work benefit. 1 in 5 disabled people nationally do get PIP, and that PIP enables them in many instances to be able to work. It enables them to either get to work, to use the tech that they need, various different things that they need to buy to in order to make sure that they can carry on working. So the actual links that the government are making between work and PIP is a little bit misleading in that respect, because you can be working and you can get PIP. And absolutely, the number of people who are going to have to cut their costs enormously, and it may affect their ability to work.
So let me ask you bluntly, Dominic, under the bill as it now stands, would a severely visually impaired person, like a totally blind person, get PIPs under these new rules?
Well, you would like to think it would not affect somebody who is severely visually impaired, because they ought to be able to get a score of at least 4 points in at least 2 categories, including the reading category. That isn't a given, though. My experience, when I've worked for many years with blind and partially sighted people who've made claims, 2-point scores are very, very common. And quite often, to get to the 4 points, you have to challenge. You have to take it to mandatory reconsideration and very frequently on to appeal. Now, when you're represented and you have somebody to support you in this, in the battle against trying to get the right PIP award, getting a 4-point score is definitely achievable, and it ought to be sustainable. But it's not always given. There is an encouraging statistic that's been given out by RNIB actually recently, which is that they think that perhaps only 1 in 10 of severely sight impaired people will be affected adversely by this. That hopefully will bear some truth.
What's Dominic? I have to ask you.
Me
that.
Too.
Pretty sure it's based on some information that was gleaned by an organisation called Benefits and Work, who actually requested and received information with a breakdown of different disabilities and what they scored with PIP. And sensory impairment was kind of grouped in with quite a lot of other conditions. So it was very difficult to get an exact figure on that as to how what percentage there would be who are getting PIP but are currently don't have a four-point score. It is very difficult to tell. All I know for sure is that when dealing with literally hundreds of cases over the years, a great many of them will only have got 2 points. When you argue PIP correctly at mandatory reconsideration and usually at appeal, and you emphasise particular regulations, there are two regulations, regulations 4 and 7, somebody who is severe sight impaired really ought to be getting a four-point score. Very important just to mention as well, Peter, that unfortunately, research that RNIB did a couple of years ago found that one quarter of people who are severe sight impaired in the UK are not actually getting any PIP or any disability benefit. And a number of those will have actually tried but been turned down. So the message has to go out to still make claims and wherever you can, get help, get representation to make sure that your needs as someone who is severe sight impaired are getting represented fully and properly in your claim.
Kevin, I want to ask you this. Who do you think this 4-point rule was aimed at to stop getting PIPs? Because it must have been introduced for a reason.
They're trying to get the numbers down. I mean, they won't say this, but they're really trying to get the numbers down. They think the numbers are out of control. And I think the blind could well be collateral damage for the government trying to aim at a group thinking, how do I get rid of people who shouldn't be having it? And there's an awful lot of whispers in Whitehall and in Parliament about, well, of course, we're not really trying to get disabled people.
So you may think this is not intentional.
I really do think it could be accidental. The only example I can think of was that nearly 50 years ago, one of the first stories I really worked on was when the deafblind were refused the mobility allowance on the grounds that they could walk. So I've been here and I've seen collateral damage before. And what I want to know is, does the RNIB figure says 90% are fine? Does that mean that they know that 90% of people with PIP now will not be reassessed? Because Liz Kendall said that severely disabled people who basically deserve it, I'm sorry, it's an awful way of phrasing it, will not be reassessed.
Kelsey, how do you feel hearing all this?
I think it's unnerving, right? It's unsettling. Something that really spoke to me was the fact that, you know, we've spoken about the additional costs of disability on a kind of financial sense and how PIP covers that at the moment. Something that this whole situation speaks to is the kind of mental and emotional kind of additional cost of disability, the fact that things take extra energy, take extra capacity, and there's a lot more thought going in. This is a situation, the risk of losing, you know, a significant degree of my independence, my ability to access work, to access a lot of other things around me. That's, you know, ticking on in the background as another additional sort of mental load, mental cost to disability. It's not a one-off thing. This has been happening, you know, in the back of disabled people's minds since the beginning of this particular saga and many years before.
Dominic, we've talked a lot about PIPs. There are also significant changes to universal credit as part of this bill, which will involve major cuts to the benefits of many visually impaired people who aren't in or can't find work. Just remind us of what that involves, because it certainly in this conversation, it's been perhaps rather forgotten about with the fuss about PIPs.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the key major changes are to what they call the health element, which is currently they call it the limited capability for work-related activity element, but it's being changed to less of a mouthful, the health element. That's actually being frozen. That's part of universal credit for people who can't look for work because of their disability or condition. The amount of that benefit is being frozen at £97 a week until the end of the decade. But it's also being halved next year from 2026 for any new claimants. And then it will be frozen for them too till the end of the decade. And what's going to happen just after that in 2028, the work capability assessment that assesses whether you get that element is actually being scrapped. And this is where we bring it back to PIP again, because if you're not in receipt of daily living PIP, you won't get that health element. So they're tying the two together very much in that respect,
right?
By 2028. So financially, it's going to make a massive difference due to the work capability assessment scrapping. People who lose PIP daily living, they're potentially going to lose up to £12,000 a year. And that is £12,000 a year of extra costs that they will have as a result of their condition.
Dominic, what a lot of people will be wondering is, if there's going to be all this change, what's going to happen about reassessments? Who is likely to be reassessed? How soon? How frequently?
Well, at the moment, what the government have said they're going to do is they're going to introduce face-to-face reassessments. That is one major change.
Is that good or bad?
It's a mixture. In some respects, you know, face-to-face assessments, in my experience, are actually can be very, very helpful. One of the problems we have had in the past, though, is that blind and partially sighted people aren't getting very good face-to-face assessments. In other words, observations are being made of them which are unfair, though inaccurate, and decisions are being made on that kind of basis. So we have a real problem with that, and we obviously want to make sure that improves. RNIB have been pushing for that for a long time. In terms of what they're going to do or how often people are going to be reassessed, that will depend. There is, for years now, they've been trying to put together a severe disabilities group, whereby if you fall within that group, you won't be reassessed. Now, as far as I'm aware, being completely blind at the moment isn't going to be one of those categories.
So it's not regarded as a severe disability.
Well, it is, but it's not sufficient to possibly fall within that group. What they were looking at was a sensory impairment group, so that if you were both deaf and blind, then you would fall within it. Now, I can't quote that as being exactly what the Labour Party would do now. It may be that they're going to change that. They may broaden the bracket that you can to fall within that. So hopefully that will be the case. That kind of detail isn't with us yet, I'm afraid.
Right. Staying with this, for a lot of older people, they will either be on disability living allowance because of the time that they passed the age of 64 and a bit, or 65. And then there are people who stay on PIPs after that time. Now, they will certainly be wondering if they're likely to be subjected to an assessment, a reassessment.
Well, technically you can be reassessed, but one would imagine that that would not be a demographic that would be focused on when it comes to making the changes. What the government are really looking at, and they've made no bones about this, they're looking at working age people. They've made the link between PIP and working, which, of course, as we've discussed already, is not necessarily one that we should be looking at. However, that's the bracket they're really going for. I would not be overly concerned if I was somebody well over pension age, still in receipt of DLA, for example, because you're still part of the old grouping. I wouldn't be too concerned if I was in that bracket personally. However, obviously, if a letter comes through the post, get some assistance, get some help, and you can be, you know, assisted and represented to try and make sure that nothing adverse happens to your claim.
The real dilemma here is to try to be honest with people about what you think's happening, but not scaring the living daylights out of them. Kevin, what happens now? What's the political timetable with this bill?
It's really important to point out that nothing is going to happen with these benefits until November 2026. But the bill now makes its way through Parliament, and we'll have to see what the government says and if there are amendments which clarify things for blind people.
Kelsey Trevitt, Dominic Milne, Kevin Mulhern, thank you all very much indeed. It only remains to say that we will continue to press for a minister to join us on In Touch as soon as possible to give us more detail about how these changes will affect visually impaired people. In the meantime, you can give us your questions and comments by emailing intouch@bbc.co.uk and leave voice messages on 0161 836 1338. From me, Peter White, and producer Beth Hemmings, goodbye.